Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to the first question regarding how the problems regarding investigation, especially regard to Katomeno, I must indicate here that the approach that we took when investigating those matters was that from the onset there was involvement of prosecution when we started with that investigation. So it was basically a prosecution-driven kind of investigation. So from our investigation side, every step of the way, every investigation we do, then the prosecutors look at it and indicate to us if there are any other issues that we need to cover, then those issues are covered. To the extent that even the charges that these members were indicted with in court, they would then look at what would be the appropriate charge and what kind of evidence we need to cover for us to be able to satisfy the elements of those crimes. So all the step of the way, it was a prosecution-driven kind of investigation. With regard to the question on targets that are low, I must indicate here that in my introductory remark, I've indicated that in the 12-13 financial year, because it was our first year of the implementation of IPID Act, and also our strategic targets for that year was for us to determine what strategic output we can then put for this financial year. We then had to look at what kind, the kind of cases that we received and the extent of the workload that we received. So the targets that we set ourselves were informed by that information. Members must be aware that in terms of the IPID Act, the police now have an obligation to report all these 1628 matters to us. This, in essence, had an effect that, unlike in the IPID environment, we had an increase in the number of cases that we received relating to 1628, especially your assault cases. So when we then sat at our strategic planning session and looked at what would then be appropriate targets that would be smart in a sense, then we looked at those issues in terms of the kind of resources that we have as a department in this current financial year and the number of cases that we received in the past financial year and potentially what kind of cases we will receive in this financial year. I must also indicate here that as the acting executive director had indicated, whereas the IPID Act enforces that SAPS members must report all these section 28 matters, 28.18G to the IPID. Not all members complied with that, to an extent that we even had to open criminal charges against the members for failing to comply with the section 29 in terms of reporting. The effect of that is that even in this financial year, the possibility is that even the workload can increase. So we needed to be very cautious when we set this target to ensure that we don't set targets for ourselves that can be hard for us to achieve or impossible to achieve. Also, what I must indicate to honorable members is that when you look at our strategic plans in the previous financial year, The targets were more aligned to the financial year in terms of completion of cases, whereas now we're saying now the target must be aligned to our regulations, which says that we must now complete cases within 90 days. So those kind of variables then informed our decision to keep the targets where they are. And however, what we did, we tried not to lower the targets too much. So in some instances, we maintained the targets that we had in the ICD environment. In some instances, we even increased. And maybe also to touch on the question raised by the Honorable Chairperson with regard to reducing the target with regard to registration and allocation of the chairperson. What also we realized here is that when we went through our strategic documents in the past 3 years, we realized that we had actually initially had two targets. We had a target for registration within 24 hours, and then we also had a target for allocation within 48 hours. And now when we did the strategic plan for the past financial year, then we combined those to be a target for 48 hours. But we realized that given the reasons that I've given in terms of achieving the 48-hour turnaround time and the increase in the workload, it was it proved difficult to achieve those 48-hour turnaround time. And therefore, we therefore decided to revert back to 72 hours, which essentially is more or less the same as what the initial position was, because the initial position was first registration within 24 hours and then allocation within 48 hours. Now we combined that to say registration and allocation should therefore happen within 72 hours. With regard to the issue of salaries, whether our investigators are paid at the same level as the SAPS members. The SAPS investigators, in terms of the notches, are paid at a slightly higher level, comparable to our investigator at the same level. In fact, this is one of the contentious issues that the department is grappling with, in the sense that in terms of Section 23 of the IPID Act, provides that our investigators should not be paid less favorable than the SAPS counterpart. But when you look at the section, talks not only about salaries, but basically the entire benefit structure of an investigator. So when you look at the IPID environment, whereas the actual notches are lower than that of the SAPS members. However, when you look at the total package in terms of what IPID provides, for instance, subsidized motor vehicle and so forth, the scheme in which the SAPS do not participate in, you'll find that the total package for our investigators is higher. But also at the entry level, our entry level is at level 7, whereas entry level at the SAPS of your constable, for instance, I think it's level 4 or 5. But this issue is still subject to negotiations and deliberations at the chamber level between IPID as employer and the unions in this regard. And with regard to the question by Roman Chumo on the targets which are low and the carryover thereof. What we had done, we considered all these issues in the sense that the reality is that investigation by its nature, maybe this is something that I need to talk about. Investigation by its nature is such that it is not always possible that you can receive a case, for instance, this month and be able to do an investigation and complete it in that particular month. So by its nature, it may take a longer period depending on the complexity of that particular investigation. However, what we then decided to do as a department, we then said, whereas we set our targets at this level, for instance, 65% and 55% depending on the category of the case that we're investigating, what we made sure is that we have specific targets relating to backlogs, so that we ensure that we don't have a situation where we have a lot of cases that are backlog cases. We also came up with a new indicator with regards to brought forward cases, so that cases that we bring forward from the previous financial year, we also work on those matters, so that we have a situation where ultimately we avoid a situation of having backlog cases at all, whereas we understand that it's not possible that we won't have brought forward cases that we have to deal with. So that is why our strategic our AP and strategic documents also deal with the three different kinds: your backlog, your brought forward, as well as your current cases. We then developed also a strategy which has been workshopped to provincial management in terms of implementing that strategy of ensuring that you deal with your backlog, you deal with your brought forward, and then as you move into the new financial year, you move with cases that are not very old. But also to ensure that we deal with the issue of the 90-day period that our regulations requires us to do. In any event, the regulations also say where we are unable to meet the 90-day period, we must give reasons for not doing so, and it's something also that we have implemented. In terms of the Tatani matter, also in our investigation approach on the Tatani matter, we followed the same approach. Immediately when we became aware of the Tatani matter, our investigators attended the scene, and then we then ensured that all the members that were involved in the Tatani matter were called in and were disarmed and so forth. But also, part of what we did, when we started that investigation, we then had a team from the prosecuting authority who worked hand in hand with our investigators in that investigation. So there were a variety of things that were done, number of witnesses that came through, and some of them, especially for identification purposes, which came from the police themselves. As members may be aware that there was an issue that was raised that some of the witnesses said our investigators had threatened them and so forth, and which our investigators were called to clarify that issue. But as part of a program, what we looked at and having learned lessons from the Tatani matter, then we took a strategic decision that when we do our training on the IPID manual, the issue of training our investigators on usage of cameras and videos so that suspect police members, even if they are witnesses, when they are interviewed, there will be recording of those interviews so that when in the future they try to renege on their statements, we have proof of what was actually said. And then with regard to the media cases, whether we get cases from the media or we rely on people. Currently, because of our move now from being a complaint-driven to an investigative-driven department, over 90% of our cases come from the reporting by the SAPS as provided for in terms of Section 29 of the IPID Act. However, because Section 28(1)(h) provides that the minister, the MEC, or even the executive director can initiate this investigation. Where we receive investigations either from a member of the public or from the mentioned authorities, then we do investigate those matters. The number of cases that we receive from the general public has dramatically reduced because now the reporting is done by the SAPS. So whereas the public has still got platform to report these matters to us. Once what we find is that most of the time when they report the matter to us, say it's an assault case and they report that they've been assaulted by the police, the first thing we do is to check if the police have in fact reported this matter to us. And then most of the time we found that the police have in fact already reported the matter to us, and then we'll form the complaint accordingly if they had not received the acknowledgement, the letter that says we are already investigating that. No, we will in fact be investigating. Where we find that the matter has not been reported to us, then we will then engage with the police in that regard to take over the investigation. But also what we'll do then is to open up a non-compliance Section 33 a criminal case against the officers that failed to report this matter to us. Honorable Mgwenya, sorry, Ndlovu, ask how many cases do we investigate against the member of the Metro Police. Whereas we have not published our annual report, however, the number of investigations that we do against the Metro Police is very minimal. As at the half year, it was about 2% of the total workload that we received. Yeah. With regard to the quality of our investigations, I think it's important also to indicate that because we moved from the IPID into a new transition into the IPID environment, as we implement, we also learn, you know, in terms of the cases that we received and so forth. And what we then decided that we must now do moving forward to ensure reliability and the quality of our investigation was to say that whereas investigations happen in the provinces and reports which goes to the SAPS with recommendation as well as to the DPP with recommendation flow from there. But at national office, what we'll do, we'll then do a sampling of these cases to see, to assess the quality of these reports that are done by our investigators. For instance, in respect of cases that go to the DPP, for instance, where cases are declined to be prosecuted, then we do a sample of all those cases from different provinces to see what led to the decline to prosecute. Was that because of the quality of investigations that went into it? Was it because of the competence maybe of the investigator? Or was it simply because there wasn't enough evidence to be able to prosecute? Then we'll do that assessment. Then after doing that assessment, where we find that there's a need to do specific interventions, that is what we'll do. Also where, for instance, you find that maybe the DPP has queried the investigations that we did to say maybe we still need to do this and this. We'll also do a sampling of those cases to say what caused the queries. Was it because of the investigator or was it because of the supervisor who did not do his supervisory role in ensuring that before these cases go to the DPP, all the investigations that need to be done there have been done. And then once we've done that kind of analysis, then we'll also strategize and focus our training with regard to those issues. This will also be the situation with regard to case recommendations that are forwarded to the SAPS. Part of the engagements that I spoke about earlier of monthly engagement between ourselves, the SAPS, and the Civilian Secretariat for Police, as well as the quarterly engagements at the highest level, would be also to look at these issues, but also to get a sense from these stakeholders, the NDPP, the DPP, to get a sense from them, how do they assess the quality of our investigation, so that that engagement can also help in improving the quality of investigation of our investigators. With regard to investigators that were trained, we have trained 51 investigators on national certificate on crime resolving. We also trained 32, we subjected 32 of our investigators on the recognition of prior learning crime resolving program. We also trained 118 investigators on DNA and sexual offenses investigation. We also subjected 120 investigators on torture investigation. We also subjected 120 investigators on training on corruption. So that is the extent of training that we engaged in the previous financial year. I must also indicate that during the course of that training, because we had a full year program for the training, but because of, for instance, what happened in Marikana, then we had to pull people out of that training to go and help in that kind of situation. So to an extent that not all investigators were trained. However, we already have a program for this financial year. It's a full program that starts now in May. And those that were not subjected to this training that I've alluded to now, they'll be subjected to those training. But we also recognize the need for training on supervision and management, which is the training that we intend to train our especially those senior investigators who were initially at the entry level of investigation. We also had interactions with the State Security Agency with a view to help us on using intelligence as a tool to investigate. We have engagements also with the SAPS to get our investigators to be trained also at the SAPS Detective Academy, particularly that now the SAPS training is now accredited. And moving forward, from what we understand from SACICA, this training will only be done by the SAPS. Chairperson, I think I've covered most of the, or all the questions. If I've missed any, I will.
Before I'm going to take follow-up questions, is the question outstanding? The one was? Oh, the numbers of that the percentages arrived from. They've indicated that that's based on the previous year's case intake.
Yes.
Yeah. In the report, in the annual report, you will provide the actual
figures. Yes, we will provide all the numbers.
Just coming back to the training before we take the follow-up questions, because there are follow-up questions, so we will allow follow-up questions now. I asked very specifically, how many of your investigators are fully trained? That does not require any further training, in terms of the training courses that you now provide. How many of them are fully trained?
Our view, Chairperson, is that training is an ongoing...
There's a basic minimum requirement. How many of them are fully trained to be investigators? I'm not talking about specializing, etc.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Our investigators, from senior investigator up to director investigation.
You're still not answering my question. You had an hour to get this answer. We asked the number. I specifically said how many are fully trained, how many still need to get to that level, and what will be the training opportunities to get them to that level for this year? Members, I hope IPA can now see why we say it's important that you can't just say human resource development plan in your indicators. You've got to be specific about these things. You've got to be the specific, because what are we measuring? Can you give us the answer?
Chairperson, I don't have the answer in terms of the specifics.
Well, that's actually unacceptable. We had an hour break, more than an hour.
Yes, Chairperson, the information I got is the one that I provided. Unfortunately, in terms of the numbers that have not yet been said, because what we have now is the 120 investigators that have indicated. So far, the numbers that we have is that we have 173 investigators. But the issue about it is that some of the investigators came in during the financial year. So I wouldn't, I would be averse to
just stop,
put
my
head
stop,
on the block.
Just stop, because you're not going to give us, switch off your microphone, please. You're not going to give us the information that you have available. We ask specific questions, we want specific answers. That's why we have this engagement. So you are going to get that information for us, and you're going to provide it to us by the end of the week. Can I now take follow-up questions? Honourable Kelly, Honourable Kula Barnett, Honourable Annelies. In that order, please.
Chairperson, the answer about the Tatane case. The gentleman says the witnesses were threatened. And I'm sure if you really need a follow-up, there were police who were closer to Tatane before he dropped down. So if you really did your work, even you yourself would have recognized those policemen, at least those policemen who were just around her before she fell down. But now you didn't do anything because it said they were threatened, the witnesses. So there's still something that you did not do right. Thanks.
If I can try and assist, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, the National Prosecuting Authority is still considering whether they're going to appeal.
Yes.
And they are looking at the further investigations of what happened in terms of the police officers, that the witnesses that changed the statements. You are not involved in that investigation because it might implicate some of your own people as well. So the Hawks have taken over that investigation, if I'm correct. Correct. Okay.
If I may just try to explain, Chair, I think probably Mr. Soko put it the other
Chair,
way.
I actually also have something about the same issue, so perhaps I should put that before we hear the answer.
Just keep your train of thought, Ms. Becky will come to you now. I'll give you an opportunity. Honourable Kulabana.
Thank you. Yeah, look, it's also about the Tatane issue, which of course absolutely shook the nation. Not many people get to watch someone die on screen, and then the whole lot of them go off. And I do understand there's hopefully going to be a Hawks investigation. But what concerned me about the answer was that you rather brushed that aside and said that you'd learnt from this exercise that actually you should be recording and filming interviews such as the ones that you had. Now, to my knowledge, you have already dealt with thousands, not hundreds, thousands of cases against SAPS members, criminal matters ranging from murder to rape to armed robbery to name it. And now you're telling us you learned from the Tatane case. Why did you not learn from the thousands of cases that you've done previously? Surely there have been instances. I know there have been instances where SAPS members have not been suspended by the police. They've still got their firearm. They threaten the witnesses who will put them behind bars. So surely you've learned from those thousands of cases that you've done interviews on previously. And surely it wasn't one person interviewing a SAPS member. There would have been two or more. You need witnesses. You know that. You're a lawyer. So I fail to understand how you could have allowed this to happen. I absolutely fail to understand it. Where is the experience, the institutional memory from all these years of working in the ICD? Surely there are standard procedures to doing these interviews. I'm absolutely floored by your answer. Absolutely floored.
Honourable Lawwu.
Chairperson, my brother talked about 2%, but he didn't tell me 2% from what? Of municipal police. You talk about 2%, and I wanted to know where does the 2% base, on what figure does the 2% base? You see, the second question, Chairperson, why I asked this case, I refer to the called experience investigation. Now, these questions that are being brought by Ms. Quilly and Ms. Colabarant, it's based on the question of experience and integrity of investigation. At the end, what makes people see what you are doing? Because it impacts on your integrity, yeah, in everything that we are doing. That's why I asked that question, that what is the average of that? Because if the average is very low, and the chairperson piggyback on that by asking how many of those people have been trained, fully trained and so on, because it was piggybacking on that one, because you can't send a person who's not fully trained to do this thing. And at the end of the day, it comes back to you as a bad example, and you learn from that. That's where my question was based, because at the end of the day, it's your integrity that is in the forefront. It's not just the integrity of the investigator; it's the integrity of the whole institution that is in place. Therefore, if the institution fails the people out there, then we are inviting other things to happen.
Members, I'm covered with my follow-up question. I'm going to ask that we take responses to this, and then we take a second round of questions on this, because I'm sure there are more questions. Continue, please.
Acting Chair, I will try my level best to explain the position with the Tatani matter. The fact of the matter is that the problem was not necessarily per se with the investigation. The problem was also not with regard to the evidence. The evidence was there. The problem was in court with regard to the presentation and interpretation of the evidence. So in as far as the investigation is concerned, we did what was supposed to have been done. And we have engaged with the prosecution even during the trial once it was going ahead, making recommendations to them on which angle they must take the prosecution. I'll give a simple example. It's common cause that in court during litigation, when a particular witness starts contradicting himself, the basic thing that you do if you are a real experienced prosecutor is to attend the main proceedings and do a trial within a trial to convert that particular area. I'm not saying this because I want to level blame against the NPA. I'm saying in as far as the investigation is concerned, we covered everything. And as far as the evidence is concerned, we covered everything, because we even wanted to subpoena the person from SABC who took the video footage, the very same person that is shown by another camera taking the video footage right there and then. But that was not necessarily acceptable to the prosecution. So there were a lot of things that went on. And when you look at the court decision, there is nowhere in the decision where the quality of the investigation is being raised as an issue. But it's the kinds of witnesses that were there, how reliable these witnesses were. That is what kills the case.
Look, members, we can carry on with this case. I think we must leave it at this, because it's ongoing. There's an ongoing investigation. The NPA must decide whether it's going to prosecute again. And I think we must leave it at that before we say something or ask something here that we should not. Is there any other questions that's outstanding on this one? The 2%. the metro issue.
Yeah, Chairperson, the 2% would be as at the half year would be of the total intake of 3,222 cases. So that is the 2% of that.
Why are you not giving us the third quarter? Because it's not the half year intake.
Yes.
Why are you not giving us the third quarter if you don't want to give us the fourth quarter?
Chairperson, I don't have the numbers for the third quarter, but I can provide the committee with the actual numbers.
I just cannot come to this meeting not being prepared. You can't do this. That's why I wrote to you and said you must provide us also with your fourth quarter financials so that you know that we're going to ask these questions. And we have been on this committee long enough to know that these figures have not been audited. We understand when they vary once they come in the annual report. We're not going to blame you for that unless it's 100% variance or 60% variance. But you can't come to these meetings not having the information. This is now the second or the third question where we ask, where you say to us, we don't have the information. Or you just try and give us the information that you do have. Those figures will be provided, but we need to take further recommendations around those. Maybe a second round of questions to investigate as part of IFED. Honourable Mulabatsi, Honourable Kula Barnard.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The officers that are implicated in the Marikana and the Katomenia, are they still at work or what is the situation? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Kula Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. I was just looking for a percentage of how many of your, and I don't even want to call them recommendations because they don't call them recommendations in the bill. I can't remember the exact, is it instructions? Is it, I don't know what the word is in the bill. What you say to the SAS, we believe you must suspend these people. It's not a recommendation. It's not a recommendation in the bill. I know we took that word out, but I can't for the life of me think what word we left in. Is it recommendation? Oh dear Lord, what were we thinking? Yeah, it's got to be Baba and Lobu's fault. Alright, I mean, we used to have and be able to get from you a percentage of how many of your recommendations were implemented and how many were ignored. And we watched as the years went by, got bigger and bigger and bigger, and you hit somewhere between 85 and 90% were ignored. Now we have the new dispensation. Do you do the same sort of calculation? Do you know how many of your recommendations are implemented when you say suspend this person because they're a danger to the witnesses or shouldn't be at the office or for whatever reason it is, take their firearm, whatever recommendations you give? What percentage are implemented? We need to know if the SAPs are treating you with the same contempt they treated the ICD with.
The question is, you will provide that as in the annual report, but you've got to have a target. That's the member's point. You've got to have a target, and you don't have a target. So that makes measuring you on that basis, and measuring SAPs for that matter, on that basis impossible. So you will have to look at it. Is there any other member with another question in terms of investigators? I've got, if there's none. I want to understand, you complained that one of your risk factors is the long distances that investigators have to travel. Yet if we look at your budget, you're not increasing your budget for fuel, and the investigators. In fact, if I remember correctly, there's a drop in that environment. The goods and services, what does it fall under? Goods and services, there's a drop. So how can you complain to us that it's a problem but you also don't budget for it. I want to understand. Fuel has increased over the last financial year tremendously, so much so that it's one of the pikes within the SAPS environment. And one would think it would be the same with you. Even though it's their own cars, they claim back the kilometers, etc., etc. So where are you making provision for that, and why is, don't we see that there is an increase there as well? The second question I have is, I've heard what you've said about this is the first full year in terms of IFRS and baseline targets, etc. But I don't agree with you, and I said the same thing last year. Many of these offences were in the ICD Act as well. You had baselines. You had baselines. So, yes, for the new offences, surely you can establish new new baselines and then new targets. I'm really a bit perturbed by the fact that you say that you treat all of these as new, and that you're not looking at also your 2012-13 figures for actual cases in terms of what we've talked about in the past seems to be low, yet you then lower your targets for investigation as well.
It doesn't add up.
Second question, how was your target for systemic corruption investigations determined? You can answer those, I've still got more. I'm sure there's one or two other members that still got more as well. So answer them quick and short, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The long distance travel, we refer to the fact that because we do not have satellite offices in all the districts.
We understand that. We're asking why does the budget not speak to that?
Thanks, Honorable Members. Chairperson, when you look into the overall within services, yes, we agree there's a decline in order to increase the capacity. However, when you look into the specific items, like the one that you are raising, your travel and subsistence, there's an increase in order to assist what you are just raising.
Can you tell us what the increase is?
Chairperson, on your ENE, I'm not sure whether you have a copy with you, but I'm having a copy here. When you looked into investigation, we have increased their SNT, which is travel and subsistence, from 17.4 million to 17.8 million in 2013 and 14, and 18 million in 14 and 15. To 19 million in 15 and 16 financial year. So it has been increased over the growth of MTF.
Continue with the others, please.
Chairperson, with regard to the targets on systemic corruption, firstly, we had a workshop where we wanted to where we were discussing the strategy on how we would deal with issues of systemic corruption. And based on the inputs that came from that workshop, we thought it prudent that because systemic corruption by its nature is an involved investigation, so we wanted to start at a low base to see where and what kind of a dent we can make in this regard. So hence the target therefore was that each province should at least in a financial year identify two systemic corruption investigations that must be approved for investigation. Once those systemic corruption investigations have now been approved, based on the nature of that particular systemic corruption investigation and the project proposals in terms of how long that systemic corruption investigation will take and so forth. Then we then have another target that says at least we should complete four of these systemic corruption investigations per annum.
We have a second round of questions. New questions. If you don't have any more, that's fine.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, sure.
I see in your...
Sorry, just before you do, Honourable Molebati's question was not answered. Tony Marikana.
Sorry, Honourable Shepherdson, I missed that question. The members who were charged on the Katomena matter are all on suspension. Currently on the Marikana matter, no member has been charged. The commission is still busy with that matter.
I find that quite odd. Perhaps you could explain the legalities there. I mean, if Marikana, one knows there were deaths. You saw the police, you saw the bullets, you saw the bodies, and a great deal more. And yet no one has been suspended. I mean, there's no question there. With the Cato Manor crowd, there are accusations, but no one saw it happen. I mean, and yet they're all suspended. Why suspend the one and not the other? I can't. The one seems to have much clearer proof than the others, where the accusations are made by a fellow facing two terms in prison. So I fail to understand the reasoning. Perhaps the legal reason you could explain?
Mm-hmm. I think just to
Honourable Ndlovu.
There is something wrong with this. Procedure, tell me, how, when, and how did you, did they come to suspend a person? On what basis did you suspend a person?
Well,
because the problem I'm having now, if your answer is saying that to the Marikana people, the police that were involved in Marikana, nobody suspended because of the commission. The commission is something else, but the action is something else. And you are dealing with action. Now, that is why I'm asking this question. I wanted to go to the background now of what causes you to suspend a person? Is it after investigation and then you find that the person has done this, or after knowing that the person has done this, because you know very well what has happened there?
Honourable Legetu, on this issue, please. But I also want to urge members to be circumspect about these things. The Marikana Commission is the Judicial Commission of Inquiry. It's got the same status as a court. So we must be careful about the questions that we ask. Honourable Lova's question is fine, because he's asking in principle, how do you come to that decision? Honourable Legetu.
Chair, I needed clarity on what you were saying just now, so I'm covered. Thanks.
Honourable George.
My question is unplanned investigation project. I just wanted to ask them, do you have a contingent of investigators at the head of it? Especially that, like you said, that there are unplanned investigation projects like the Marikana one. Do you have a contingent at the head of it, or are all your investigators in the project?
Can you respond to those, please, because I want to move on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to respond on the question that was posed on what basis to suspend a person, I think a person, what needs to be understood is that House members are also governed by the Labor Relations Act. And in terms of that act, discipline is a management responsibility. It being a management responsibility, it is then the responsibility of SAPS management to discipline those people, whether they suspend them first or whether they proceed with the disciplinary hearing. It does not fall within the mandate of IPID, so it's an area that we do not have control over. All we do is to make recommendations to them to say suspend the members, charge them with the following. As to whether they do that, it's something that falls outside what we have control over. And SAPS will be well placed then to respond to the committee on why are these members not suspended, what considerations were taken into account.
Are you still answering?
Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. On unplanned investigations, whether we have investigators at head office, no, we don't have investigators at head office. What happens is that when we have a kind of situation as Marikana happened, then we look at the overall pool of investigators we have in the department to say where can we pull the resources from the provinces to go and help in that a high-profile kind of investigation, and that is the approach that we use.
Are you sure you don't have investigators at national office? Because you gave figures on that. That's why I'm asking. You're saying no, and she's saying yes. There was figures given this morning. Members, another round of questions. Are there any further questions that you would like to ask?
Chairperson, I'm not quite sure I understood Mrs. Mbeki correctly. As she said that they do the recommendation.
They cannot do the suspension.
No. They do the recommendation. And it's up to the management of that person, of that structure that they did the recommendation to suspend the person. That's what she said.
It's correct. That's what the law says. The problem is, and that's where IPED is not forthcoming either, is that the quality of the investigation sometimes allows for SAPS to say we can't implement this recommendation. And members will know we saw it ourselves, like the Appington issue, where investigations about X and Y, but the report speaks about A, B, and C in terms of individuals. Now, you can't expect management then to act on that recommendation. And that leads me to my question. Nowhere in your targets are they, I presume and I hope, it is in service agreements, performance agreements that are signed. I hope you have performance agreements that are signed at all levels. The management of dockets, because this is what we're talking about in the end, quality of dockets, etc., etc. Members, can I just get an indication? Honourable Ntumi, you still have a question, because I want to summarise. Are you fine? Okay. I want to summarise on this one. Because I think that is one of the things that you are lacking in your performance APPs, is the quality of the investigations. And the absence of a target for compliance by SAPS on your recommendations is a shortcoming. We've said that to SAPS, we are saying it to you as well. The Act's clear about it. The Act says they must comply to your recommendations. We want to see what is your figure that you want and what is it that they are achieving according to that. They also have no APP around that, which shows to us that, indicates to us that they're not really taking you seriously in terms of that. So when you have your quarterly meetings, talk about this and have a similar understanding about what it's going to be that you're going to give to us. I think, members, when we look at the issue of investigations, we must say to IPED that we would like to see them to report in the manner that we're now expecting the detectives within SAPS to report. Especially in your number, in your annual report. Number received, number cases received, number finalized, number closed, and the reason for that. I'm talking closed and detected. Cases to court, and your conviction rate. We also need to start measuring the quality of the investigations that we are having and not just the quantity of the investigations. Ms. Mbeki just indicated to me the act, I can't remember now. Does it say that the Metro Police must also report these issues to you, or is it open? It's open, or they must?
No, they must.
So the report of the MP that was assaulted by the Metro in Joburg, yeah. Have you received that report from the Metro in Joburg?
It's all over the front pages.
Did you receive the report from the Metro in Joburg? No. You see, that's my concern.
You can't sit back and rely on the facts.
Jefferson.
No, no, it's not SAPS, Metro.
Or Metro.
Jefferson will have to verify with the Gauteng office. But what would normally happen is that immediately we become aware of it from the media, and it wasn't reported to us, then we follow up, and then we'll follow the Section 33 route of charging those members.
But I think what we need is a separate indicator, because if you're focusing on SAPS, which is good and fine, but members are quite right. We are letting the Metro get away with murder, quite frankly. And I think we need a separate indicator in future from you on the number of cases received from metros throughout the country, number of cases investigated, the same issue as with SAPS, number of recommendations made, implementation of those recommendations, etc., etc. The committee remains concerned regarding the low targets, because members are quite right. It is going to result in an unmanageable backlog, or it's going to result in you simply closing cases undetected. So that would be definitely one of our findings, that we are concerned about it, and that we recommendation would be that you beef up those and that we start working towards the 60-70% in this case. I think that is in terms of those. The television, before we go to legal services, the television issue, the licenses, have you got the answer?
We are still getting the responses.
Why does it take so long?
We need to verify information that we provide at this level.
Well, I would hope you verified your own presentation, yet it said 1111 equals 12. So please, that's just to mention one. We can go to the others as well. I've made it clear that information must be here before the end of business today, because we want to interrogate it. I want to understand why you need televisions, first of all, frankly. And how many televisions are in this environment?
Members, are there anything else on this issue that you would like to ask before we step off?
Sorry, I haven't got the... Why do they need televisions in this environment? And where are these televisions? And what are we doing with those televisions? I'm pretty sure the television also comes with a DSTV connection. So, entertainment. What's your entertainment budget for the year? No, they do, because they have meetings. So you've got the E&E with you. Check firstly. While they're looking for it, can I also make it clear that when we say that in future we would like to see a report in the annual report like the detectives, I would suggest that you look at the detectives report. It also means that in future, next year's APPs, we expect then detection rate targets, dockets closed targets,
conviction rate.
Yeah. We expect all of those, dockets closed and detectives. That's the target we want to see going down. So we would really expect those to be in your APPs going ahead. Just another general remark. You speak very, very well about the NDP. Yet we don't see targets speaking to the NDP. Same issue as with SAPS. And we have scheduled SAPS
in terms of the NDP, Ms. Mbeki, I think we will schedule you specifically, the IPED specifically, or also to come and speak to us about the NDP and how you intend giving life to what the NDP requires of yourselves. Do you have the figure for entertainment?
Chairperson, we don't have specific budget for entertainment. And with regard to the TVs, the DSTVs were discontinued as part of the cost containment measures that took place during the year. They were there, but they were discontinued during the course of the year as part of cost containment.
How can you not have the entertainment budget? So tell me, when you have management meetings, you don't have tea, coffee, nothing. When you have meetings outside of your offices, you don't have an entertainment budget.
Can I give context here, person, to what Director of Finance is trying to say? We don't specifically budget for entertainment in the context of what it's perceived as. The only form of perceived entertainment we have is, for example, where we're having your year-end functions, which are specifically stated in our policy that we can only have them up to the maximum prescribed rate per individual. So we don't have exorbitant budgets where we allocate entertainment budgets not based on any policy or guidelines or prescriptions in the department.
Can I ask you, what's your catering budget?
And Chef, surely they're having bezos where the, what, the people don't get fed.
And that's why I'm asking, what is your catering budget?
Okay. As published in the E&E, the catering departmental activities item is for the IPID as a whole for 2013-14 is 0.4 million. And then the details for the sub-programs are also reflected there in the E&E.
So there is no such thing as there is no entertainment or... You see, the problem is subs is here before you. Because then subs tell us with there's an entertainment and a catering budget. So we know to ask for the second one as well. Remus tea is going to be ready in a few minutes. I would suggest that we get tea first. Then we go over to legal services, which would be the last program for today. And the outstanding matters. You're not going to leave today without those outstanding matters. You had an hour during lunch, more than an hour, to get those information. So it's 3:05. I just want to give them an opportunity to pack up. You can stretch your legs in the meantime. It's 3:05. Can we be back at 3:20? Because the tea is not put out yet. 3:20, we're back.
I fall under program 2, I have program 3, investigation. But I don't go out on this now.
We don't have investigation.
Why?
We just never had investigation
because
provincial level.
Because investigations
happen
at provincial level.
We're
more responsible for policy and not operational.
What is the education? What is the education?
sometimes then if these things do not happen, you are left with people who are idle and doing nothing. That's why we're saying be based on the provincial level. When we meet in Mutumi, because it's, we are going to create another plan.
It's better than we, but it's still give your national position. If it is in place, then you are in anything in the government. Where you have made through the government,
Madam, I may allow agency no information. How many?
Then you can deploy them to Victoria,
I just need to confirm this information because we need to be sure. I never hear the people that need to be sure. We need to be sure. How many investigators were actually trained and how many were not trained? So if you say 31 times 3 plus 1. And that is why I could not use them based on the numbers that you gave me, those that attended the different training. But I could not tell them where so many were trained, so many were not trained. Because I didn't want to use the because you need to check on the information you have with the different investigators that you see. How many? Okay, the other thing that they ask is how many were put in that they don't need training.
So I think
you have
recommended that all of us
that we don't need training. That is, they're investigators who are trained. You know, they are. Well, they are fully trained, so they don't really need further training. Yeah. Except, I said he was the continuous evaluation. No, who are they?
That to me is
the current.
So I'm saying,
at least it's only for you guys.
You must understand this thing. If a man looks after his wife and children, you can't do something that is wrong. That's what he's supposed to do anyway.
Oh,
yeah. You can't train somebody for
doing what you are supposed to do.
Yeah. Some of the things we do, not that we don't, but that's what they're supposed to be doing.
I've got a number here that you can call.
Okay, then I must put something in front of it. Put it over there, because it's absolutely cooking.
Sorry.
Make someone else help. Now he's going to cry.
Yeah.
You need to put something in front of it because this hot air will cook you to death.
So these numbers are 100 billion. So basically, like we have the maximum people in the same 100 billion.
That is working, the aircon. It's not working with that. These two are broken. Yeah, but you also keep putting trays on them. That doesn't help the air come out. No, they're not blowing cold air. It's just making hot air. Same. But that's the only one working in the whole room. Nothing gets serviced in this building. That's why the lifts collapse, the aircon collapses. Yeah, I'm like, it's just terrible inside. And this thing's blowing out hot air the whole time. You'd think it was a politician.
So what is that?
So what happens now, I think, because I mean, it came out when you started. Okay, we'll find it. So all of them were changed.
That's Because they were saying that this piece of work is so important.
Legal services, let's continue. Can we have the presentation, please? 20 past, sorry. Legal services, can we start with the presentation, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Slide 60. Chairperson, honorable members, legal services plays a very important role in supporting the core business of the Directorate, which is investigation of cases. To this end, legal services is structured in such a way that its activities are geared towards providing general advice to the Directorate over and above the important role of providing legal support to the core business. And legal services is also strategically positioned in its supporting role to evaluate the quality of recommendations that are made by provincial offices to assess the quality thereof and whether they are legally sound to be implemented by our stakeholders, that is the SAPS and the Director of Prosecution. and legal service plays an available inputs into policies related to directorate's operation and will ensure that the directorate will avoid unnecessary litigation against investigators. Slide 61, the purpose of the program, legal services manages and facilitates the provisioning of investigation advisory services and provide litigation advisory services. This program consists of the following components: litigation and advisory services. This component manages the directorate legal obligations, coordinates civil and labor litigation matters. Investigation advisory services. The purpose of this component is to provide support during and after completion of investigation and the granting of policing powers to investigators. It provides legal advice and guidance to investigators and ensure that all cases are forwarded for prosecution, that are provided for prosecution comply with the requirements of a prosecution process. The outputs for legal services, management of the directorate's legal obligation, coordinates civil and labor litigation matters, legal advice and guidance to investigators during and after completion of investigation and granting of policing powers. In terms of output and targets, output indicators and targets, on the management of the directorate's legal obligation and coordination of civil and labor matters, we have three indicators there. Indicator is percentage of contracts and service level agreements finalized within 30 working days of request. And then the target there is 90% of the contracts in the current financial year and outer years. The second one is percentage of legal documents provided to the directorate within 21 working days of request, and the target there is 90% of legal opinions provided in this financial year and the outer years. The third one is percentage of policies reviewed for legal compliance within 21 working days of request, and the target is also 90 days of policies reviewed in the current financial year and the outer years. Second output is legal advice, slide 64, legal advice and guidance to investigators during and after completion of investigation and granting of policing powers. The first indicator, the number of practice notes and directive bulletin produced and issued. The target there is four of these in this current financial year and also in the outer years. Percentage of legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours, followed by written advice within 48 hours of request. The target is 90% of legal advice provided in this current financial year and in the outer years. Percentage of applications for providing policing powers processed within 5 working days of request. The target is 100% of applications processed and 100% also in the outer years. That is legal services.
Thank you. Finance?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. The slides that are relevant to the budget allocation of Program 3 are on slide number 34, which is Budget Program 3, Legal Services, slide 34. Okay, again, this has been laid out in a similar format to your previous budget presentation. And the purpose of this program, as explained by Mr. Sosoko, is to manage and facilitate the provision of investigation advisory services and provide legal and investigation advisory services. And it consists of sub-programs which will be discussed in the next slide. This table then compares the program's three budget allocations as compared to the allocations in 2012-13. And you must remember that 2012-13 saw the establishment of this program in terms of the implementation of the IPIC Act. The table here depicts that the overall budget of Program 3 decreases by 20%. If we look further into the details in the next slide, the expenditure focus areas for legal services for the upcoming NTF cycle include the provision providing of sound legal advice, the supporting and the drafting of IPIDs, SLAs, and new contracts, and the issuing of practice notes and directives on criminal law, criminal procedure law, and related investigation matters. And the majority of the budget allocations within this program lie within investigation and advisory services. The next slide, number 36, further depicts the budget allocation per sub-program, per economic classification. And the majority, again, there can be seen of allocations going to investigation, advisory services, and minimal findings provided for machinery and equipment in order to accommodate your normal replacement and repair and take. But however, notice must be made that there is current engagement by the department into reconsidering the allocations to this sub-program to ensure the growth and full participation of our investigation advisory services. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anything to add before I open for questions? Mrs. Lee? At this point, I will open for questions. Honorable Mulule Kitoj, followed by Diane Kolabanat, Honorable Diane Kolabanat.
Madam Chair, here the percentage of legal advice provided in investigation within 24 hours. He said 90%. My question is, this advice, are they not hybrid? Because there are certain requirements in law and in practice where certain things must be done in a particular case. Now, if now you put 90%, are you therefore saying that if my question is right, that they have the right to get another 10% where they can travel? And the contract, this is not a big department. You gotta be, why give to tell it to 90% in order to travel? And in the person of legal opinion, you see, it's all this. Percentage of legal opinion provided to directly within 21 days, in one day of the plan, which, in my understanding, caused some of these things, also by nature of the conflict. Now, why do you give 90% of
Thank you, Chair. I'm very concerned that your legal services staffing level remains, to my eye, very low. 8 staff members. You don't seem to want to add more, or you make no indication that you intend to add more. That's less than 1 legal services staff member per province. Now, I'm not sure what happens if they don't have legal advice in each province at each of their main stations. Then, to me, it's a recipe for disaster. So
please explain and explain why you're not looking to expand this division. I'm also looking at why there's an increase in the number of working days for the finalization of contracts and an even bigger increase for legal opinions provided. Just explain why that's happened. Thank you.
Chairperson, I don't know whether I'm stereotyped, but the percentages that derive from no numbers are really confusing me. I don't know. Because just percentages, but there are no numbers that the percentages are derived from. Thanks,
Chairperson. Any other questions? Honourable Mulevat.
Thanks, Chairperson. Why is there an increase in the number of working days from 21 days to 30 days for the finalization of SLA and contract, and from 10 days to 21 days for legal opinions provided? Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, also in this regard, I would like to ask a question as well. I do not see in your budget, I might have missed it, a contingency liability budget. Yet you are in a court case, you're involved in a court case. A court case that, if it goes bad, is going to have serious implications for the department. What are you doing around that? Secondly, related to the same question, I believe as IPED gets stronger, and as IPED starts showing its teeth, that you are going to get claims against you, either from police officers that feel they've been done wrong or whatever the case may be. So the absence of a contingency liability concerns me in this regard. Can we get these questions, Honourable George, and then they can answer the questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, you just reminded me, that was a question I forgot, you see, because of my younger twin brother. He disturbed me. How much are you spending at the moment for litigation? If any, if there's nothing, then if there is something, how many and how much have you budgeted for?
If you answer the questions, I bet, and then we will take a follow-up, and if there's further questions, we will take those.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. The reason for the time frame, for the percentages that we have, 90 and not 100, are mainly based on practical considerations. Looking at the sub-complement of this service, there's only 5 professionals. The 3 are admin support. We had to be realistic in order to meet the SMART principles to say we want to do it. But the time frame with regard to, let me go first to the one under investigation advisory services, because we have prioritized the work of legal services in as far as the provision of legal advice to investigation is concerned. The one on legal and litigation advisory services is just general legal advice to the entire organization. But the main priority is investigation. And the percentages are directly linked to the time frame. We are saying as a matter of principle, it should be, we are supposed to be providing legal advice to investigators once they're in the field immediately there and then. And we are saying within 24 hours. We are saying 90% and taking out the 10%, not because we don't want to do 100%, but we are giving ourselves an allowance in cases that are more complicated and complex. And because then we may run the risk of giving them advice that is not legally sound, which may not necessarily stand any of the legal or constitutional mantra. We are giving ourselves the 10% to deal with those who say we might not be able to give concrete advice within the 24 hours, but we want to give ourselves time to take
another additional number of hours to be able to do so. That is why we're saying 90% and not 100%. Ideally, in an ideal environment, it's supposed to be 100%. But we are mindful of the capacity constraints that we have. And we are saying, given the fact that we only have 4 people, as we speak now, legal services is left with only 2 people because most of the legal services people get act anywhere else. As and when there's a crisis in the organization, the first point of call is legal services. So we want to allow ourselves that level of flexibility to say, we know the environment that we operate within, we know the capacity constraints that we have, and we cannot therefore be unrealistic because we want to look good on paper and end up not being able to deliver. And once we do that, then we open ourselves up for unnecessary audit clearance. So the legal advice is 24 hours. There are some instances where it's possible to give it immediately on the phone. There are some where you have to do a bit of research. You need to check case law because it's an issue that we've never dealt with before. Then going back to the increases on the number of working days, that also is based on the fact that we've considered competing priorities. Investigation comes top, and everything else may then have to wait for as long as we deliver within the stipulated time frame. But I think the biggest issue, and Honorable Ms. Barnard has raised the issue of capacity. We do not have sufficient capacity within this particular program. But given the fact that we also know that within investigation, we are ailing. Investigation is also bleeding. We then said, let us rather for now, in the next couple of years, let's prioritize investigation. And we hope that as we go along, and if it's possible for us to get additional funding, we'll then be able to fully capacitate legal services. And ideally, we would have loved a situation where there is at least a legal sort of advisor for each and every province so that investigators know who to call. The manner in which we are organized right now, they end up having to call me directly. So I end up being the legal advisor and the decision maker at the same time, which is also from an audit point of view is not correct. But we are saying we would ideally want to make sure that we're fully capacitated, and we would ideally want to make sure that we deliver 100% on almost everything. But the current situation does not allow us to do that. Otherwise, we'll be setting ourselves up for failure.
Continue. No, it's not
everything. I request the CFO to talk to the issue of budget.
Honorable members, with regard to contingent liability, the department does not have a specific budget for contingent liability under our budget allocation. However, we have since disclosed the possible claim to the department in our financial statement under the contingent liability notes.
I'm asking the question with due respect, Director, because the fact of the matter is you know that you've got this liability. What happens if the court finds against you? Do we close down IPIT because you're not budgeting for it? Do we simply close down IPIT because you will then not have any operational money left?
Yes, I hear you, Chairperson. The challenge here in budgeting, you need to budget for a specific item, but in this case, you don't know. You don't have an indication in terms of when the case will be concluded and when are we going to pay. In that case, then, we'll then have to disclose the underspending each and every year until such time the case is concluded. Hence, there is no specific budget until such time there is an outcome, because we don't even know the outcome. What if you have made a provision for it, and at the end of the day, the case is in our favor? Then it means you have a specific savings, which you should have avoided.
It's still not clear, because SAFS has got a 67 billion rand budget.
Yeah.
They've got a huge contingency budget.
Yeah.
Contingency liability budget.
Yeah.
And you're also not addressing the issue of what is going to happen if you start getting personal claims against yourself.
Yeah.
Either people feeling that you haven't investigated the case properly, or officers saying that you've done them wrong. Ms. Mbeki, can we indicate this as an issue of concern? And I think the department should have a discussion with Treasury around this issue. It is really a concern. Where are you going to get the money if the court case gets finalized tomorrow and you are in the wrong? Where are you going to get the money from?
even the current court case with the buildings, even the current court case with the buildings, where are you going to get the money from? Honourable Kulabana, I saw your hand.
No, you absolutely covered me as you spoke. About the SAPs having a contingent liability, they should be doing exactly the same. I can't understand why they're not.
It is possible to budget for it,
yeah.
And you should be budgeting for it. And I must be honest, the concern that members raise around the incapacity of this unit and your own admittance to the fact that you do not have enough staff here worries us well. Because if we look at the medium-term expenditure framework, you're not planning to increase this either. So you know your shortcomings, but you're not telling us this is how we would like to see going forward this be increased. And you need the support of this committee in order to do that. If this committee is not going to speak out in Parliament saying that we believe that there should be more people, like we did with investigators and you got the money, if we're not going to say this, you're not going to get the money. Treasury is not going to listen to you alone on these issues. But you're not lobbying us for it either. So as far as we are concerned, you're satisfied with what you have. Honourable Law.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I had Ms. Mbeki said that there are only two now instead of four.
I said professionals are fine. Most of us are acting in other positions. So there is that vacuum that gets created as a result of that. When you take, like, there's one director, legal services, who's currently acting provincial head in the Eastern Cape. So as and when there's a crisis in the organization, the first point of call is to take people from legal services because there's no capacity anywhere else.
Honourable George, how many posts? There's 8 posts, of which 5 are legal posts. How many of them are filled currently?
They are all filled.
How many of them are actually in the office doing that?
In fact, it's 2 admin staff that is still left, and 2 senior admin officers that are left today.
There's nobody with legal qualifications in the in that section.
Currently, given the acting arrangement, there isn't.
This is a very, very serious issue because it basically means your legal section is run by admin staff and by accident. And then you get into a car crash, and then there's even one less. They are. They're in court as we speak. Members, are there any other questions for them on this point? We will ask him that question. They must give us an indication because it's clear that they are not doing it. With your budget in general, and I mean it's not only this part of it, is that it's not forward-looking enough. You identify your challenges, or you leave it to the committee to identify your challenges. But then if you're not going to voice your need for more investigators, your need for more legal people, nobody's going to give attention to it. If it's not said, it's not going to get done. So I would suggest that you register that concern. Yeah. Members, any other questions? The TV issue, do we have answers? Now you've got the answers. You see, that's what frustrates me is when you go out here, then you say, I'm being unfair to you. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can provide the breakdown as to the location of TVs and the amount and where they are based. In terms of your provincial offices, there are 24 TV sets throughout our provincial offices. Three are located in KZN, in the boardroom, the provincial head office, and the satellite office. Four are located in Western Cape, that is in the boardroom, the provincial head office, the satellite office, and the reception area. One is in Eastern Cape, one in Mpumalanga, four in Free State, being in the boardroom, the provincial head office, the reception area, and the waiting room. Three are in Gauteng, one being in the provincial head office, the reception, and the deputy provincial head office. Two are in Northern Cape, one being in the boardroom, the other being in the provincial head office. Three are in Limpopo, one being in the provincial head office, the satellite office, and the reception area. And three are in Northwest, one being in the boardroom, the provincial head office, and the satellite office. In terms of national office, there are seven TV sets, one in information management, one in database management, one in the office of the executive director, one in the reception area, one in legal services, one in communications, and one in the executive boardroom.
Now, what is the amount that you spent on TV license?
The current TV license fee charged to iPad is 275. So if you take the total set of 31 TV sets, that equates to a charge of 8,525 annually.
What's the purpose of these TV sets? Anybody is welcome to answer for us.
Honorable Chair, the issue with the TVs and all the licenses that go with them is a historical issue that we have inherited from ICD. But when we did the budget analysis last year, this is one of the issues that we have identified to say we cannot continue spending on this because it is non-core. But unfortunately, the TVs were already in our system. And we were able to cut down on the in fact, we terminated the agreements that we had for DSTV because we also did not understand why would people have television when they're supposed to be working. But unfortunately, the assets are still remaining within the system because most of them were still fairly new. The ones at reception are usually used for walk-in or step-in clients just to keep them busy whilst they are sitting and waiting to be attended. I would like to believe that those were the reasons. But other than that, in an IP environment, we do not need television sets. Because surely when we go to work, we go to work. We are not necessarily going to watch TV. And maybe it's an issue that we need to take forward when we deal with the disposal of our assets and see how can we dispose of these particular assets because we don't need them. But with regard to the TV licenses, we will have to terminate most of them and maybe at most leave the ones at reception area.
I can understand why you need a television at your information, for instance, because they might be wanting to follow the Marikana case or whatever the issue is. They might be trying to follow that or whatever. But really, it's no wonder we don't get answers from provinces because the acting provincial heads are sitting watching DSTV instead of managing. I mean, we should have four.
Chair, with all due respect, they've had this for a year or more. Why don't you just get rid of them? Why is there a debate about this? That's just nonsense.
Acting provincial head for Western Cape.
Chairperson, thanks, honorable members. The Western Cape never had the DSTV in a since inception of ICD and up to date. And secondly, the
TVs that were that the other TVs that were there, all TVs that were used at the time when we were still using videos to, if we had to one TV for investigators, if there are the video footages that we want to look at, we use that for that. And the other ones, in fact, we are in the process of disposing because they are all TVs that were there since the inception of ICD, and we are in the process of disposing them.
I want to caution, because it's now again about what I said before lunch. Thank you, Chairperson, for this recommendation. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. If you need televisions for a specific purpose, then have them. But this thing about having one in the head of a province's office and having one there and having one there, I can even understand having them in the reception area. But what I don't understand is why would you then play TV programs? Why are you not telling them about iPad? Why don't you develop a DVD that talks about iPad and tell them about their rights, etc.? Instead of, you know, I would also hope that people are not sitting there waiting for hours in your reception areas. That's the other thing that one would hope for. But you see, this is the danger of coming to this committee, and then when we raise an issue, you just say, oh no, we've been in the wrong, we're going to correct it. If you've got a good reason for something, tell us that. But clearly you don't need the number of televisions that you do have. I can understand that your investigators would need, I can understand that they would need work that DVD players so that they can actually, and I hope it's not video players, that they can actually watch evidence that come before them, etc., etc. But really, it seems like a small thing. 8,500 in a 200 million rand budget is not much, but the fact of the matter is you've been paying it over a number of years. You've paid for those TVs that you've bought, that could, money that could have been spent in a different way. Maybe if you actually had electronic recording equipment for your investigators, you would not have the issue of the Tatane issue where people then change their evidence in court, we've actually got it on record, etc. Work smarter. Ish. You're done? Members, I want to close the meeting. It seems to me that we're done. I want to They're giving me a percentage of their salary, each of them. I don't ask for much. That there are some positive steps that we must acknowledge. And the first is the reprioritization of the budget in line with core strategic priorities, and we welcome that. The question, however, remains whether this is adequate to ensure that all vacant posts can be filled and additional staff hired, especially in Program 2. We're still waiting, and we give you the deadline of Friday for the fourth quarter expenditure. A number of concerns remain, however. The first is the need to fill critical posts, including at management level, and to retain staff. And unfortunately, you were not able to convince us today that you are addressing either of those the way it should be addressed. It was reported that you have put in place a process in 2012-13 to ensure that all vacant posts were filled by an identified date, with weekly follow-up meetings to monitor the progress. This seems not to have yielded the desired results. The director should therefore explain to us how are you going to fill these vacancies in 2013-14 in a different manner so that it actually happens.
So how is your recruitment strategy differing from what was there in the past? And will it pay dividends? We also keep on being concerned, our concern have not been addressed in terms of the skilled upskilling of your investigators. The mere fact that you couldn't give us clear answer today on how many of them are fully trained, how many still need to get there. So we need to we urge this as part of our concerns that the committee raised. Also, the lack of infrastructure plan and the mere fact that you're only planning to open one satellite office this year remains a concern to the committee. It, for us, it indicates a lack of driving the needs that you know that are there. With us, you're not driving it with us. You're not saying to us, we believe that this budget is not enough, therefore we can't open it. You're not driving it with Treasury. So it's laissez faire business as usual, so you need to address that. The National Prosecuting Authority came to the Justice Committee today, and they said to the Justice Committee, we will not achieve our target of opening the 90 sexual courts because we don't have the budget to follow that plan. That's what we expect of the departments when they come before us. Otherwise, you come and you relate to us what is historically there and what we can read ourselves in your E&E and in your APPs. This committee can influence the decisions of Treasury, but you have not required us to do so. We are also still concerned about your ability to deal with an increase in public protest. And in previous meetings we had discussions about being there on the scene with your own video cameras so that you can also videotape what is happening and have independent video material insofar as that is concerned. We've also raised with you having that you should have discussions with SAPS, saying that especially where the TRT and the public order policing units are involved, that where it's more difficult to identify them afterwards, we've said to you, have discussions with SAPS. Tell them to number the bulletproof vests that they issue in the morning so that the specific number on a bulletproof vest refers to a specific person or the helmet or whatever the case may be. We don't see any progress in terms of that. And then I think the committee, members, if I'm not representing you well, you must please indicate to me. The committee is also still concerned about your proactive role that you should be playing in investigations. We hope that when you get here for the annual report that you will actually be able to say to us, on the following cases, it was proactive cases initiated by us as IPED, following on reports that we have seen in the media, etc., etc., and therefore we came to the following conclusions. That is part of your mandate. It's to change, through the findings that you do find, the approach of SAPS. It's not about simply, yes it is, about disciplining the SAPS officer who acts outside of the confines of the law. It's also about changing the attitude, changing the way SAPS does business so that we can systematically change what is a bigger problem. We still require the following information. The directorate must provide the committee with a comprehensive report on the current vacancies within the directorate. Amongst others, the report must include the date when the vacancies occurred and also the strategy of the directorate to fill these vacancies, including the dates by which it will be filled. A clear strategy on the planning of satellite offices, specifically on the process followed to determine the location of satellite offices. They should also include the strategy of the directorate to have offices in the rural areas. The committee is clear about its concern that you keep on looking at the easy places. The directorate must publish an addendum to the 2013-14 annual performance plan. This must include the following. Clearly set measurable targets for the number of policies to be reviewed in the 2013-14 financial year. Ms. Mbeki, I'm saying an addendum very specifically because that means you must go to the minister with it for him to table. Targets must be included for the full ICT plan of the directorate with measurable targets on each implementation phase of the plan. A SMART target for the development, implementation and review of the human resource management strategy. In other words, the training opportunities, etc. Separate targets must be developed and included for training and staff development. Target for compliance to recommendations to SAPS and municipal police services. Comprehensive report on training of investigations, including the number of fully trained and still needed to be trained investigators. We remain concerned about the low investigation targets. We have clearly indicated that we would expect in the annual report that you start reporting on those in a fashion of complaints received or cases received and under the type of cases received, cases investigated, dockets ready for prosecution, dockets at court and conviction rate. Last comment that we make is that in future we would like to see you measuring yourself in terms of investigation similar, we're not saying exactly the same because some of it might not be applicable, similar to that of the SAPS Detective Services. With those few words, I would like to thank, first of all, committee members. At least it wasn't a very, very long day today. I would like to thank IPED, and I want to say to IPED, this engagement should be a two-way communication. And that's why I stopped you when you kept on thanking us for suggestions that we are making. We're not your bosses. You're in control of the department. You are the management of the department. We are the legislative body that see that you are following the strategy, the political plan, policy that was put on table, that it's that your plan follows that and that your budget follows the plan. That is why we are here. I want to thank the department for the engagement. We are going to miss Mbeki. We will schedule you for a meeting around the National Development Plan and how you intend playing your part in it. Thank each of these of your management. We hope next time when we meet that we meet in an atmosphere where we are talking to people that have been appointed. I'm the last person to speak. I'm almost acting as long as the executive director, but it's not in my hands, luckily. But the fact of the matter is it's not a healthy situation. It's a situation that needs to be clarified. And I think the committee will be in its right to write a letter, Pavelwa, if you can make a note of that, to the minister to find out by when we can expect this position of executive director to be filled, so that we can have a clear indication of that as well. Members, tomorrow morning we're starting at 9:30. Can you? V475. Now, to the committee secretary, please, and Mr. Martu is here. We want the secretariat only to be there at 10. Members, we're starting 9:30 so that Nicolette can take us through the research report on the secretariat. So we will start 9:30. The secretariat only have to be there at 10 o'clock. And can I please remind you also to inform CIRA that they only have to be in at Parliament at 2 o'clock. 2:30 we will start. The committee will start 2:30 on Thursday. I will remind you again tomorrow. We will start 2:30 again with input from the researchers on the CIRA. With those few words, the meeting is adjourned. Dinner is on its way at 4 o'clock. We did try to cancel it, but they didn't want us to cancel, so dinner is on its way. Those of you who want to hang around, and even if you take some food home, please do so. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.